the Hurricanes should be the favorite in the Metro. And I think that they will end up being the favorite in the Metro, according to the betting market. And I would put them, if you look at the Stanley Cup odds, because of Toronto's status, just as the biggest franchise in the sport, they're the second favorite. Bookmakers know they can hang any price on Toronto and they'll still take money.
Right.
But I would put Carolina, after Colorado, I would put Tampa and then Carolina kind of in that next tier with almost nobody else.
This is the Canes Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. The Canes Corner Podcast is part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now, here's your host, Adam Gold.
Welcome to the Canes Corner Podcast. I am Adam Gold. Thank you very much. It's been a while. 3 weeks. Didn't intend for it to be this long. Between chats, we're going to talk to Michael Leboeuf of the Action Network here in a little bit. And actually, we're going to do that before we do anything else. And then coming up on the other side of Michael Leboeuf, I will have a pretty, I guess, an important announcement. I don't know if it's an important announcement or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's an announcement. We'll just let you decide whether or not it's an important announcement. And also on the other side, we'll give you a few thoughts about the Carolina Hurricanes and what's going on. But there's been a lot going on in the NHL, although nothing for the last several weeks. We still don't know where Nazem Kadri is going to go. How about that? Nazem Kadri was one of the best players in the league last year, and we have no word that he's... Nobody's even talking about it. People have gone to the cottage, I guess, for all the hockey reporters, the insiders that go away for the summer. They've all gone to the cottage. They're in their cans of margaritas or whatever they're doing, and nobody's even talking about Nazem Kadri anymore. But Kadri hasn't signed, or has he? We'll start some rumors. Not really start some rumors, but we'll kind of feed the rumor mill. But one of the things we're going to talk to Michael about is the improvement overall of the Eastern Conference. And, like, think about in the Metropolitan Division, the four teams that didn't make the playoffs. All right, Philly didn't get better. Philly got worse. Philly's no good. But Columbus got better. Although I don't like losing Oliver Bjorkstrand if I'm a Columbus Blue Jackets fan. But I do like adding Johnny Gaudreau. So, I mean, Columbus looks like a little bit better team. Certainly going to be more offense. I think the Devils got better. Andre Palat. John Marino on defense, solid, steady guy from Pittsburgh. Eric Halla, who's, I mean, feisty, ornery, can play, good third center, I think, for that team. But they've got so much young talent. Dougie Hamilton missed a bunch of time last year with the broken jaw. He's going to be better this year. So if they get any goaltending, the Devils are going to be a difficult team to play against. And the Islanders are going to be better. The Islanders aren't going to suck. So the Metropolitan Division is good. The Metropolitan Division got better. I don't know. Did Washington get better? I don't know. I don't think so. I think Pittsburgh's probably still the same. But still, those teams were playoff teams and dangerous. Carolina certainly doesn't love playing the Capitals, although they will play the Capitals in the Stadium Series game. And then you got the Atlantic Division, where Florida gets Matthew Tkachuk. You know, Toronto and Tampa are still Toronto and Tampa. And then Boston's going to get the band back together at some point when everybody gets healthy. But you've got improvement in Detroit. You've got improvement in Ottawa. Big-time improvement in Ottawa. And the Buffalo Sabres are still a couple, maybe a year, 2 years away from being serious threats. But that is an outfit that is getting better, and they are just loading up with young talent. Suddenly, Rasmus Dahlin is going to be their second best defenseman because Owen Power is going to be the man. So there's a lot of good in the Eastern Conference, and we're going to talk about it with Michael LaBeouf. This is the Canes Corner Podcast. This is the Canes Corner Podcast. It's brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Yes, they're back! They have announced they have signed on for another year. Isn't that exciting? Of course it is. The Aluminum Company of North Carolina, if it's for the exterior of your home, you can find it at the Aluminum Company of North Carolina on Hamlin Road in Durham. No place like it. Sammy Hanna and his crew do a great job. Siding, roofing, windows, entry doors, storm doors, gutter helmets, they've got it all. Make your home more beautiful on the outside, more energy efficient as well. So before we break real quick, on the other side of Michael LaBeouf, pretty big announcement, and a little bit about the Carolina Hurricanes and some thoughts going forward. All right, Michael LaBeouf, the man with the greatest Twitter handle in history, the Big Lebowski, from the Action Network. All right, we'll bring up odds at some point, but I know that as an Islander fan, the Islander Anxiety podcast, I want to start real quick with the Islanders. And is Lou Lamoriello hiding the signing of Nazem Kadri?
I think 2 weeks ago, when this rumor first started to percolate, I would have said, this is just, it's kind of like a joke, an inside joke among hockey people because of what happened last season with the Islanders. And Lou sat on a bunch of deals until September 1st because he didn't want anybody to know how much cap space he had. So when the Islanders announced Kyle Palmieri, Casey Cizikas, Anthony Beauvillier, Ilya Sorokin, like, these were important deals. It was September 1st that those were all made official and filed with the league. We knew they were Islander players, some because they were RFAs and
right.
Others because, like, in Palmieri's case, he was a UFA, but he was with the team and it's pretty clear he was coming back when they traded Jordan Eberle or left him exposed in the expansion draft. So when those rumors started to percolate, I was like, oh, this is funny. You know, everyone's having a little chuckle, or as you and I both love soccer,
yep.
As they say over there, they're all taking the piss about Lou. And but as things started to kind of, days became weeks, I was like, all right, it makes sense at this point. And the fact that Kadri's camp is just so quiet, and they haven't come out and said, no, that's not true, my client hasn't signed anywhere yet, I'm pretty sure it's happening. Like, I would, if like you said, we'll get to odds later, but if I was putting odds on it, I'd put Kadri to the Islanders as a, you know, pretty significant favorite, as Carolina Hurricanes against the Buffalo Sabres last season type style line, right? Like, because it, at this point, it just doesn't, there's very few seats for Kadri
right.
Left at the table. Like, one of them is Colorado, but they have to move more money than the Islanders do. And if he was going back to Colorado, the Avalanche, they don't operate like the Islanders. So you'd hear from the Avalanche saying, we're grinding towards a deal. We're still in contact with Nas's right. agent. But it's, you're not hearing any of that from anyone, whether it's Colorado. I know Detroit operates very quietly as well, but they also got a lot of their business done and filed it like normal team when they signed Perron and Kopp and stuff. But and there's also the fact that Lamoriello loves Nazem Kadri. He signed him to his last contract. He stood up for him a bunch. He even suspended him at the end of a season and like kind of made it about a tough love thing. And then Kadri came back and responded with back-to-back 32 goal seasons with the Leafs before Tavares came and the media and everybody ran him out of town. So there's just so much smoke here. And I wrote something for our partnership with the New York Post where, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and where there's silence, you know, there's Lou Lamoriello. And that seems to be the case here.
Yeah. It's just kind of weird. I mean, if he goes back to Colorado, Colorado's probably going to have to move. My guess is Samuel Girard is a guy that they could move because he's sort of expendable based on what they already have. And he was not part of the, he was not an active player because he was injured during the Stanley Cup run. So They've proven they can win without Samuel Girard. But I'm not, again, I'm not sure that that's enough. I think they might have to move more. Detroit's got plenty of cap space, but they could just do that. Right?
I mean, right, exactly.
They could just sign him. They wouldn't, I realize that they have some RFAs and UFAs coming up, you know, after this upcoming year, including Dylan Larkin, that they're going to have to clear, make sure that they have money for, although I've heard Dylan Larkin's name in the rumor mill a lot. So they could do the Kadri thing now and then figure everything else out later. But I just keep thinking that even though last year was a little different, because as you said, they were really all their own players. I mean, it could be the same. I have no idea. What I don't understand is coming off the year he's had, the fact that he basically kept it between the ditches in terms of his behavior, Nazem Kadri should have been signed by now. So I assume he already is, and that the Islanders are just waiting to figure everything else out.
Yeah, I think that's right. And people kind of, because it's taken so long, and I think people are kind of sick of discussing him, it's kind of going overlooked that he was the number two free agent on the board going into free agency.
Yeah.
So usually that player, sometimes they have to wait for the big fish to sign. And then once that player signed, pretty quickly thereafter, the number two guy goes. So this isn't Sonny Milano or PK Subban. This is this number two free agent on the board, a player that all 32 teams would love to have on their team. But because of the length that it's taken, and we're a week away from it being a month since the window opened, I think people are kind of just bored of the story. And that's exactly what Lamoriello wants. He just wants people to stop talking about it, and so he can just do what he does behind the scenes. And I got to tell you, it's frustrating as a fan because the offseason, you want to get excited. You know, here we are in August. All I want to do is talk about the Islanders. I don't even know what the team's going to look like. And yes, it's frustrating on one hand, but it's so hard not to be impressed that he's able to do this in the modern, it's completely out of step with modern sports, where you have guys in, like, Elliot Friedman in our sport, Fabrizio Romano in soccer, and Woj and Schefter in their sports. These guys find out everything. Like, they find out everything. And the fact that he's able to keep it tight, and you think about the degrees that means that need to be shut down, right? Like, because here on Long Island and with the Islanders, I've always said you're much more likely, almost more likely, to find out a big scoop from a local caddy or a waiter at like a nice restaurant than you are from a beat writer, because just the way the team is kind of just embedded in the community, you'll see a player or an employee at a restaurant, or you know, a wife or a girlfriend or whatever, and something will get out. But since Lamoriello's came, that's all stopped, and now it's pretty impressive that he's been able to cut all those avenues down somehow, right? Like, the assistant equipment manager's wife's best friend normally would know, oh, you guys signed Nazem Kadri because you're working on his equipment. You're taking care of his equipment orders or whatever. And that, you know, you talk like a normal human being to those kind of people, so they're your friend.
Right.
So that stuff can just leak out. But for some reason with this team, it just doesn't. And that is just really, really, really impressive.
All right, let me ask you a couple of other things, and we're going to get to the East, which is just incredible how much better the East looks. And I thought the East was good last year, even though we pretty much knew who was going to make the playoffs from, like, I would say beginning of March on, maybe even earlier. We pretty much knew who was going in. But I thought the conference was pretty good. I think it's way better now. But we'll get to that in a second. But your view on what the Hurricanes did, at least at the top, Brent Burns and Max Pacioretty are in, regardless of who they replace, because there's a lot. Carolina's going to miss probably 8 guys off their roster from last year. They can't replace all of them. Your thoughts on Burns, Pacioretty, and I guess Andre Kasha as well?
Yeah, I said to all my Islanders fan friends on the day that Johnny Gaudreau signed with the Blue Jackets, I really didn't get upset at anything until the Max Pacioretty trade happened. Because he is the type of player who I've wanted on the Islanders, and he's been linked to the Islanders in the past. Apparently, there was a deadline, a draft day deal for him at one point, when Lamoriello in charge. I think it was his first season, his first draft. They had a deal in place with the Canadiens. And not even talking about the fact that the Hurricanes gave nothing up for him, because
zero.
That's a whole other
zero.
Story.
Like,
but he is zero. It's hilarious because we all imagine these front offices are all talking to one another, and you know, you get an offer and you say, okay, let me call around and see if anyone can beat that. Can you beat zero? No, you can't. Of course you can. It's just outrageous. But
and they got another player too. They got a defenseman.
Yeah,
who I don't even know if he's any good, but they got another player.
He's got a pedigree, Dylan Coughlin. He's a young. I think he's projected to be like a 4 or 5 type guy. So, but aside all that. Pacioretty is like exactly if they had Max Pacioretty against the Rangers, I wouldn't have been texting you that entire series, freaking out and cursing the Hurricanes because they couldn't beat the Rangers, even though they were outplaying them, right? So he's a great fit for them, I think. You can basically pencil him in for 25 to 35, depending on his health. He'll make your power play better. He can win a game on his own because you can be getting outshot and he scores on two good, seemingly nothing plays. So he's what the team needed. And I think Burns, it's a little bit of a risk, but with a player like Jacob Slavin already in the fold, he kind of negates that risk. You know, you can pair the two of them together. You can let Burns play the Rover kind of style game he plays, and Slavin will take care of he'll button up the defense. So the Hurricanes should be the favorite in the Metro. And I think that they will end up being the favorite in the Metro according to the betting market. And I would put them, if you look at the Stanley Cup odds, because of Toronto's status, just as the biggest franchise in the sport, they're the second favorite. Bookmakers know they can hang any price on Toronto and they'll still take money.
Right.
But I would put Carolina, after Colorado, I would put Tampa and then Carolina kind of in that next tier with almost nobody else. I think that they're that good. They got the goaltending. They have now a scorer. We know what their kind of play driving numbers are going to be. And so there's very little not to like here. And I know that there's a lot of kind of in and out, but there always is with this team. So I wouldn't be too worried about the fact that you're going to have to lose D'Angelo and Trocheck and these guys, because this team is used to it. This core is used to that kind of stuff already. And, Andre Kashub is like a perfect Hurricane as well. So as long as he can stay healthy. So I'm very bullish on the Hurricanes. The prices are too short to bet them, but I would say, in the Metropolitan, they're in a tier above every other team. I think the chasing pack you can kind of all lump together, but Carolina stands above that chasing pack right now.
All right, we're going to talk about the chasing pack with Michael Leboeuf of the Action Network at The Big Lebowski on Twitter. All right, the Rangers, I mean, they didn't do much. I don't really think they had to, but they did solidify, I guess, their two center. With Vincent Trocheck. I guess he's sort of the replacement for Ryan Strome. I think it's an upgrade. I'm not entirely sure. But Trocheck is a guy who can play in every situation. He's good around the net in a power play, kill penalties, win faceoffs. He's feisty. He and Brad Marchand got into a back and forth this year based on Marchand calling himself a Lamborghini and Trocheck a Prius, which was really funny. He's just that type of a kind of a pesty player. He was very popular here, but the Hurricanes weren't going to 7 years, even at $5.5 million. They would have done $5.5 million for three, but they weren't doing it for seven. So how do you see the Rangers? We all know how good they are in net, and I kind of thought that Keandre Miller was may be the most impressive player I saw on their entire team during the playoffs, not named Shesterkin. So your thoughts on New York?
I'll say the floor for the Rangers seems to be quite high, but I don't think that the ceiling, I think we might have saw their ceiling in terms of their regular season performance last year, because they got 940 goaltending, which is absurd.
Right.
They had no COVID interruptions. They had a few kind of minor injuries to big players. Shesterkin was out for a couple of weeks. Panarin missed some time. But there was nothing, there's no like injury clusters. And then in the playoffs, I mean, you saw it. It's the Penguins fans. I don't know what your listenership is in Pittsburgh, but they'll all nod along when I say that the Rangers basically caught every break in that series.
They did.
They caught a lot of breaks against you guys. They caught a lot of breaks against the Lightning, but still couldn't win. And when the breaks started to go the other way is when the Lightning kind of just ran away from them. I do think they'll regress a little bit. I think the Trocheck signing is an upgrade in terms of the player. I think in a vacuum, Strome versus Trocheck, Trocheck is the better player. But Strome and Panarin were incredibly close. The two of them had really good chemistry.
Yeah.
There's some kind of weird rumors with Panarin and his standing with the current front office with the Rangers right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a lights-out season from him. They got career years from Kreider. They got a career year from Zibanejad. There's just so much that went right for them that it's hard to kind of be confident that that will happen again. And for everything to go right for them, putting them at one, I think they finished at what, 110 or whatever, 4 points adrift of Carolina, that probably means we saw their ceiling, that this is at their best. This core is a 110-point regular season team that, if they get the goaltending, can make noise in the playoffs. I do wonder, like, you know, their floor is probably not, is like 94 points, 96 points in a terrible season. So I'm concerned about them. I'm always concerned about them as an Islander fan. But I will say that there's just so much that went right for them last year.
Right.
So much that went right for them that I wouldn't be surprised if their season is a little more scrappy than it is, you know, shiny like it was this year. So I think the market's going to be way too high on them. I think they're going to be a very trendy Stanley Cup pick, a very trendy Eastern Conference final pick. And you know what team was that trendy Stanley Cup and trendy Eastern Conference final pick last year? The Islanders.
Yes.
When that stuff kind of happens, it really should give you pause, especially from a betting perspective. Like, if and I mean no disrespect to them, but it's like you read one of those ESPN columns or one of those TSN columns, and they got the graphic Eastern Conference Stanley Cup pick, and you're reading this the week before the season, and you see a bunch of Ranger logos. That tells you right away the betting market is going to be inflated on the Rangers. So
right.
Their team that'll be on my list of sell teams going in doesn't mean I don't think they're good. It just means I think the sentiment is too high.
All right, let's deal with the other two Metro playoff teams that, I mean, Pittsburgh essentially didn't add much. They brought everybody back. I mean, they did add Ty Smith, who I thought was a good young defenseman for the Devils, in exchange for, what, John Marino. But they basically re-signed everybody. Letang, Malkin comes back. Rickard Rakell, who they got from Anaheim, they bring him back. I don't know about Evan Rodriguez. He still might be out there for all I know. He's a good player, kind of like Evan Rodriguez. I'm not sure what Pittsburgh's cap situation is, if they just don't want to bring him back, but I thought he scored a bunch of big goals for him. But between Pittsburgh and Washington, I think basically they stayed the same. I don't think Darcy Kemper's that much of an upgrade, if he is, over Washington's goalies last year, because Washington's goalies are just average, but they've kind of been average, and Washington's just not the same type of a team, especially on the back end that they've been.
Yeah, I've been saying for 4 years that I'm waiting for one of these two teams to take a step back, but it just hasn't happened yet, and I'm going to say it again this season that one of them, it's likely that one does, and my pick would probably be Washington right now. I think the Kemper signing it gives them a little bit more stability than they had in goal. But I think what you said is right. Like, the upgrade isn't palpable. Additionally, he's an injury-prone goalie. He's been that. He's been a goaltender who, even with going back to Minnesota and Los Angeles and then Phoenix, he would miss chunks of the season a lot. He did so, I think, for a little bit with Colorado, and he's very hot and cold, and Charlie Lindgren is their backup. So their goaltending situation, it, on opening night, will look fine, but it, as an 82-game season wears and tears on a team, it's not going to be, I don't think, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
I think the Backstrom situation makes it a little interesting, a little dicey. The core, obviously, we know they're all getting up there in age. Like the Rangers, I do think that their floor is probably pretty high, but their ceiling is not that far off from their floor. Like, I could see them being 88 to 100 point team next year. And if things don't go their way, if the goaltending situation doesn't work out, I mean, you know, I know that players seem, Peter Laviolette seems to get on players' nerves after his third or fourth season.
Yes.
We could see something with that. I would say that there's some red flags in Washington. If, as an Islander fan, I know that they don't need to pick off one of these four teams. Washington would be the one that I would have my eyes on if I'm New Jersey, the Islanders, Blue Jackets, whoever in the Metro. That being said, like the Penguins, you could see it going south for them too. If Malkin, the Malkin signing to me, I try to put myself in like a Penguins fan's shoes when that went down. And if I was a fan, I'd be like, you know what? This is great. Like, I want to see these guys. I just want to keep watching Crosby, Malkin, and Letang play together until they all hang it up.
Right.
I get it. I get it from a fan's perspective. But as a bettor, when you take that out of it, Malkin is not going to give you 82 games. Yeah. Sidney Crosby is not going to give you 82 games. But Letang might, because I don't know what he's made of. And he just doesn't ever seem to really get hurt. He's outrageously good, that guy. And then, like, even their goaltending, Jari with that bounce back year, then he got hurt. So I think they have the best coach in the league. Mike Sullivan, I think, is an incredible coach.
Yep.
So he'll probably get them into the dance. But both those two teams are on shaky footing. And I think there's a reason why the Penguins have really struggled in come playoff time, because they run out of gas and they're just very rarely healthy when they need to be. So like I was saying, like at the top of the Metro section we're doing here, like I really think Carolina's got that kind of tier to themselves in the top of the Metro. And then the gap between the Rangers going down to the Islanders and that next cohort of teams is just really thin. And Washington and Pittsburgh are right there. I would right now tell you that I would, if I was making the odds, I would have the Islanders shorter than Washington and then a little bit longer than Pittsburgh and the Rangers.
And I agree. I think the Islanders, I thought last year was an aberration. Even without adding Kadri, I think they'll be definitely a challenger to a playoff spot, even if Nazem Kadri signs with, I don't know, Ottawa. We'll get to the Senators in a little bit. But Columbus, I don't think Columbus is a playoff team, but they're certainly going to be interesting with Johnny Gaudreau. I didn't see that coming, but good for Johnny Gaudreau. It'll be more difficult to beat them because they will be more offensive. That's good. I think the only bad team in the Metro is going to be Philly. But I am curious what your thoughts are regarding the New Jersey Devils, who add Andre Palat. Eric Halla, I think, is a nice third center. He's going to annoy everybody on the Devils beat. They'll hate him by February, is my guess, maybe earlier. But you know, he's a pretty good player. We had him here for half a year, so I know him. I know what he's about. He's difficult on teammates, especially younger teammates. So that's going to be worth watching. But they've got so much good young talent. At some point, they've got to be a playoff team, no?
Yeah, this is kind of the situation I was dealing with the Islanders in the early part of last decade. Like, the 2010 to 2014, 2015-ish. It's just bad luck that they're on this ascent when the division is just so good, right? Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin are still in this division. Igor Shesterkin's here. Henrik Lundqvist was here before. Now you got Sorokin. The Hurricanes are a juggernaut. So I think that with the Devils, their flaws are too vital, and they're in two key positions, which is like the goaltending is until it proves otherwise, is a really big problem. And Vitek Vanacek, to me, is he's an NHL goalie, but he's an NHL goalie who will give you 30 starts. 18 of them will be good. 12 of them will be bad. And when you're a team like the Devils, you don't have that kind of margin for error. You're going to need a goalie to give you better performances than that. And we don't know what Mackenzie Blackwood's going to be like. He was looking like he was on his way to becoming, walking his way into the tier with Shesterkin and Sorokin and Freddie Anderson in the division. But last year was an absolute mess for him.
Yeah.
And he kind of has nobody to blame but himself. It sounds like he kind of handled the situation poorly. So whether or not he bounces back is the key. And that's a little bit of a cop-out because goaltending is just so important. Because like you said, going down the middle with Hughes and Hischier, the Devils already are set. And now I think, like you said, Eric Halla, I like to separate players sometimes from being players who are good and players who are effective. He's probably the latter, right? He's an effective third-line center. And so they have a nice team being built there. I think John Marino's a good fit for them. He's a steady guy. They don't – Ty Smith, his upside is pretty high, sure. His ceiling – is pretty low. His floor is pretty low. Whereas Marino, you kind of know, like, this guy is just going to be steady and not make really too many mistakes. But they just the goaltending is just too much of a question mark. So the Devils can go one of a million different ways next season. But probability wise, I would say they're more likely to miss than they are to make. And this conversation will probably be different next August when we talk. When the Capitals and Penguins are another year older and the Hurricanes have made 16 more trades. And we don't know who's on the Islanders still, but that's probably their what they should be realistically targeting as their valid, you know, playoff push.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing when the Hurricanes make 15 more trades. All right, let's get to the other. It's one of my criticisms, and I have criticisms of even this roster. I love what they did at the top. I have my doubts about certain elements of the roster that I think will need to be addressed during the season if they're going to get the most out of this team. At some point, the Hurricanes have to start, you know, keeping a core together and not, you know, shuffling the deck, you know, 8 to 10 cards in, 8 to 10 cards out every year. It's 4 years in a row, basically, that they have done that. And I don't think it's good for them. I think it creates too much uncertainty. And, you know, the core is like 7 or 8 guys. Now, if it's a good 7 or 8, but even that, you know, Jordan Staal is part of that. All right, I didn't want to make this part about the Hurricanes. Let's go to the Atlantic Division. Now, Florida is, I mean, they made a bunch of moves last year, and they looked like they were unbeatable, and then they were very beatable I think we saw the signs in the first series against Washington, where that series could have gone the way of the Capitals very easily. And I think you and I are in agreement. The Capitals just weren't that good, but they were bothering Florida. And then, of course, it all unraveled the next series against Tampa. They just did nothing. But then they go out and they swing a blockbuster deal for a guy who should be really good when it matters in Matthew Tkachuk. Now, they had to give up a lot. You give up Jonathan Huberdeau. You give up Mackenzie Weegar. Who they were going to probably have a hard time signing based on their own cap situation. Can't believe they're paying Sergei Bobrovsky $10 million a year to be this version of Sergei Bobrovsky. That's an albatross around them. But is Florida better than Toronto, better than Tampa still?
No, I don't think so. I think the three of them are all very similar in terms of where their seasons could go and not go next season. They all have significant flaws. Florida's defense now, you take Weegar out of that top pairing. I mean, Aaron Ekblad, they were like, if we go back three seasons, people were like, oh, is this guy a bust as a number one overall pick? He's not really progressing. And then they find Weegar as a perfect fit for him, and all of a sudden Ekblad's a top 10 defenseman in the league. So that's a big thing. You know, like, that's a big deal. So you look at that defense now, it's Ekblad, Radko Gudas, Gustav Forsling, who I think is a really good player. He's not Weegar, though, and we don't know how whoever they're going to sit next to Ekblad is going to gel with them. And then you put that defense, which now has holes in it, in front of a goaltending tandem with Bobrovsky, who, like you said, $10 million goaltender, playing like a $3 million goaltender probably at this point, maybe four. I think Bobrovsky was better than people probably realized last year, but his contract is so bad, and in the cap era, you're just going to be tied to your contract that no matter what, he's going to be a disappointment. Maybe Spencer Knight clicks. This is his like breakout season, as he's still on his entry level, and that's a big deal for them. But the question marks are there, and they're seemingly betting on themselves that we'll be able to coast to the playoffs and score our way out of the goaltending issues or defensive issues, a la the Avalanche did. But that's dangerous this season. It wouldn't be dangerous last season because of where Ottawa, Detroit were. But this season, it's a little bit dangerous because while those two teams are still long shots to make the playoffs, that division is a lot better. Like, the talk about the floor being raised, every team in that division that didn't make the playoffs got not just better, but a lot better in the offseason. So there's just not going to be free points out there for Florida to pad their way to a President's Trophy. The Panthers are a team that, like, if you're gonna get dealt some crazy odds on it, them to miss the playoffs, I don't think it's an outlandish bet, because is it likely to happen? No, it's not. But it's not a crazy bet to make, because you can see this thing blowing up. They fired their coach. They bring in Paul Maurice. There's a lot of uncertainty here. Huberto was there for so long and was so effective with Barkov. So the Panthers are a team that, like, I could just see it all go, like we saw with the Islanders. Like, you get dealt one of those Murphy's Law seasons, and oh boy. And then for Tampa Bay, I think it's going to be the same song and dance out of them that we saw last season. They'll pick their spots on when they're going to show up in the regular season. Right. They'll lose three games in a row. Everyone will say, "Oh, the Lightning are tired. They're done. They don't care anymore. They're done because the three-peat was ended." And they'll show up in the playoffs and do what they do. And then I think the Leafs are in a similar boat as the Panthers. Like, you're going to bet this core on Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov in goal. I can't believe that there is a short in the betting market. Knowing what I know about how bookmakers price teams, and knowing that they're going to take money because of their standing and in just kind of like the public NHL universe, they got worse. Like, they got a lot. I think the Panthers and Leafs both took what could be a significant step backwards going into next season. Both have serious goaltending questions. The depth for both teams is not great. The Leafs are now betting in new players. They lost a couple key players like Ilya Mikheyev, who was a very versatile player. There's a lot here that could go wrong for Toronto, and I don't think people are picking up on that because they just know Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley, Tavares, like, that core is so good that it'd be crazy for them to miss the playoffs. What if Austin Matthews gets hurt? Like, what if Mitch Marner gets hurt? Then it's a huge problem. So this, both Florida and Toronto to me are boomer busts. And I would, last, like I said with the Panthers, like, last season, wouldn't be worried. But because of what Detroit and Ottawa did, and even Buffalo to some extent, there's reason. There's reason, I think, to be worried a little bit, and knowing that this regular season is not going to be a cakewalk like it was last year. And also, don't sleep on Boston. Like the Bruins have all these guys that are going to be out till November.
Right.
And I tell you, once I read on Twitter, like, okay, you know, Charlie McAvoy was seen skating today, I'm going to be betting the Bruins to win the Stanley Cup, because I can tell you that they'll be treading water. They'll be a good price, because they're always a good price. And if they click, like they can click like no other team. So I think the Bruins are dangerous. But we know the Lightning are. And then the Panthers and Leafs, like, it's going to be more of a slog than I think people realize.
Yeah, that division is crazy. David Krejci's coming back from the Czech Republic. I mean, it's the same team they have had basically for the last 5 years, but I mean, they're good. And Hurricanes fans have nightmares about David Krejci. Because to me, Krejci was the reason they won both of those series in the playoffs 2 years in a row. David Krejci is just, I don't know, he thinks the game at such an advanced level that he's an absolute joy to watch. Let me ask a couple more quick questions. Ottawa did a lot. Ottawa gave Carolina a hard time in all three games they played last year. I think Carolina managed to go like 1-1-1. I think something like that. But Ottawa was basically the better team all three times. Claude Giroux, Alex DeBrincat. I think kind of on the down low, Matthew Joseph is a good signing because I think he's a good player. Cam Talbot, that's the goaltender that maybe Toronto should have tried to get. Talbot, who can be a legit number one, I think. Ottawa's got some good young talent, too. I mean, could they push for a spot?
I think they can. I think that they're like kind of like the Devils, like I was saying before. It's more likely than not that they miss the playoffs because of the competition they're going to be dealing with. But there's definitely a world. There's probably a lot of worlds where this team does what the Los Angeles Kings did last year. They kind of just get hot and stay the course and mature as a group. I think the Talbot move is very under the radar significant for this team because it gives them stability at a position that they just haven't had any. How many goaltenders have they used? That I've never heard of a lot of the goaltenders they've used in the past like 4 or 5 seasons. So there's a lot to like about the Senators, and in that division with the problems that Boston's going to have early on, the problems that we could see the Leafs and the Panthers having, the fact that the Lightning like to pace themselves, I don't think the gap is just going to be wide enough where the Senators are going to do what they normally do, have a slow start to the season, and everyone's like, oh, the Senators are 22 points out of the playoffs again, and then they show up to play the games against the Hurricanes, where they do punch up well. Like they over the past 2 seasons, they've been the NHL's best underdog team, especially when their odds are like +200 or longer. They beat the Maple Leafs, they'll beat the Lightning, the Panthers, and the Hurricanes, et cetera. But yeah, I think that this season, like with the Giroux, the Talbot additions, those will just get them on the right path. And it does, it's a cliche, and it's something that I used to kind of poo-poo before the Islanders hired Barry Trotz, which is the cliche that you need to kind of learn how to win.
Yeah.
And this team needs to do that, and they now have guys that are kind of astute in that kind of study of being successful and being on successful teams and knowing how to keep a season on the rails before it gets derailed like they've had. So they're a very dangerous team. I think when they made that DeBrincat trade, I was like, the market's going to overreact, and I don't think it really did. Maybe it's because who else is looking at the NHL betting line on July than other than, you know, sickos like I am. But
right.
So we'll see when the actual games start. But I think that they're gonna be a dangerous team, and there's going to be a lot of hype about them, but this time I'm kind of buying that hype.
Yeah, I think they've done a really good job in the offseason. Final thing from Michael LaBeouf. Are you worried about Everton? You worried about them at all?
Yeah, I am. I will say today's loss to Chelsea made me a lot less worried about them than I thought I was, because they looked solid enough where against those better teams, as long as they can stay the course, they'll be able to nick a couple points and stay above what hopefully will be some pretty bad teams. Like, I don't think Southampton's very good.
I don't either.
We'll see. I know Bournemouth won today, but I don't think they're very good. So hopefully, you know, they just kind of coast their way to 13th place, and it's a relaxing season, because last year, man, boy, it was so tough. Every night going to bed, just thinking about the game, that because of the way that the schedule got so condensed too. Like, you're just playing Tuesday, then you're playing Saturday, then you're playing Wednesday, Sunday. It just took over my life. My wife was just not happy with me at all. I am worried about them, but I'm less worried about them after today, even though they lost, than I was this morning when I got up.
Well, we just started. We have 37 more matches to go another Merseyside fan. I'm a Liverpool guy. I was really impressed with Fulham. I thought Fulham was excellent in the first match. But Liverpool did what they do in the second half, and maybe Klopp will start Darwin Nunez now and not mess around, because that dude just makes it happen whenever he comes on. But I was really more impressed with Fulham than I was disappointed with Liverpool only getting a point.
Yeah, and I host our soccer betting podcast at Action Network called Wonder Goal, and all our preseason content, anytime we talked about Fulham, me and my co-host, we always said the same thing, which was Marco Silva really only knows how to play one way, and I saw that when he coached Everton. He's very stubborn and playing very high pressure, attacking. You know, his philosophy is very free flowing, attacking football, and I just think our train of thought was, if he tries to do that against teams like Liverpool and City, etc., down the list, like they'll get picked apart. They're going to need to learn how to just sit back and counter. And they proved, it's week one, but in week one, they proved us wrong. If they can play like that, they hunted in packs. I was very impressed with the way they hunted the ball as a very cohesive unit today. Like, every time it looked like Liverpool would counter one of their trademark counters, where it's like, how did they just make a 5-on-2 happen out of nothing? Fulham was able to snuff it out. So that result, as an Everton fan, I love to see Liverpool cough up points to teams like Fulham, but at the same time, I was like, well, maybe Fulham is not going to be the team, one of those bad teams I was just alluding to before, that Everton should easily finish above. So that was a little bit concerning, but like you said, by the time the season wraps up, we're going to be in round two of the playoffs in the NHL. So
it's a long way,
way to go.
It is a long way. All right, man. I appreciate your time as always. And we'll do it again soon.
Awesome. Yep.
Michael's great. Love talking to Michael LaBeouf. Fun guy. And as a Liverpool guy, he's an Everton guy. We'll probably go back and forth a lot this year. Hey, you got a little bonus football right there in the middle of the Canes Corner podcast. All right, speaking of the Canes. So Max Lajoie settles his arbitration case. Why that went to arbitration when he's getting 125 in the minors and 750 if he plays in the NHL. And he might, because he's a lefty defenseman and the Hurricanes don't have any of them. They got Slavin and Shea and then nobody. Everybody's a righty. Everybody on the roster as a defenseman is a righty. Right now, if you go to the Hurricanes roster, by the way, they have two number 25s, as Andre Kasha and Ethan Bear are both listed as number 25. I don't know what that says. But the Hurricanes right now have about $900,000 under the salary cap. Assuming that Jack Drury is on the opening night roster, and if I were you, I would assume that. They've got about $900,000 under the cap. They don't have enough money to even give Martin Natchez the qualifying offer at this point. So, since Lajoie settled his arbitration case Saturday, 3 days later is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Sometime between Tuesday and Thursday, the Hurricanes are either going to trade Jake Gardner or they're going to buy out his contract because they have to. Martin Natchez was not included in a deal this summer because they're keeping him, and you can't keep him if you can't pay him. So that's my guess, is that Jake Gardner will be bought out. The Hurricanes will have about a little under $4 million on the salary cap, unless they can trade Jake Gardner. And with that, they should have no problem getting Natchez done 2 years. I don't know what the number is. My guess is the AAV will probably come in somewhere under or right around $3 million. That's just a guess. You know, maybe three and a half. I don't know. But I think it'll be a 2 year deal for Natchez, somewhere in the neighborhood of an average annual value of $3 million a year. So they've got to do that. They got to bring Natchez back, and they have to find a spot for Jake Gardner's contract, whether it's on the trash heap or it's with a team that has cap room and then you can sweeten it with a draft pick, then I think you got to do that, but you have to get the salary off your books so you can sign Martin Natchez. The Hurricanes do appear to be done with the roster, and whether or not that's a good thing will remain to be seen. But I still think they're too right-handed on defense. And I don't really love their third pair to begin with, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They've done a very good job. There's a lack of veteran presence on the back end. They need that. And they're too left-handed down the middle. I think those two things are significant. And I think that the Hurricanes will probably struggle to get the most out of this team unless they can address both of those issues. That doesn't mean they won't be good. I think they'll be good. But they have to address those two things before they can become great. And that is what the goal is, right? To become great. All right, now, the announcement. For what it's worth, you may not think this is a big deal. I do for a couple of reasons. One is time. But I will be hosting Stormwatch and Aftermath during the course of this season. And I hope it's a long one. And I hope I'm worn the hell out when it's all over. I hope I have to do 115 Stormwatches. There'll be 6 preseason games, 82 in the regular season, 88, 20-some-odd games. Yeah, I hope I have to do like 115 Stormwatches and 115 Aftermaths. That's what I hope. And I hope I'm exhausted and I take a 4-week nap when it's all over. So starting in September when the Hurricanes start their preseason schedule, and what do they play? 6 games in 8 days? 6 games in 9 days? Insane. I'll be your Stormwatch and Aftermath host. So, again, you decide whether that's good good news, big news, or what. But there you go. That's my announcement. So with that said, it's been fun. We're brought to you by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. If it's for the exterior of your home, you can find it there. No place like it. AluminumCompany.com. Free no obligation estimate. They're on Hamlin Road in Durham. Go check them out. Follow the Canes Corner podcast wherever you get your podcast. This way, if you follow it, it just shows up automatically and you don't have to worry. Hey, did Gold do a podcast? Of course, it's in my phone or wherever you get your podcast. All right, people, we'll do this again very soon. We have more announcements to come in the very, very near future about a special podcast. Okay? More announcements to come. I'm not saying anything about it, but more announcements to come about a very special podcast that we are producing. But we'll give you those announcements when everything is finalized. Until then, we'll see you next time. I'm Adam. Bye.
This has been the Canes Corner Podcast with Adam Gold, presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. You can listen to this podcast at WRALSportsBand.com or wherever you get your podcasts.